Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 8, 2017. A team of UN peacekeepers arrived at the troubled area of Kajokeji.
Peacekeepers from the mission arrived in Kajokeji in the south of the country on Sunday. Civilians have been fleeing the town due to insecurity. Peacekeepers patrolled at the airport and market areas and reported seeing just a handful of civilians.
And the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says the ceasefire continues to be violated in parts of South Sudan.
The spread of the conflict in Equatoria has deepened an already dire humanitarian crisis. According to the most recent FAO report, one-third of the national population remains food insecure.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A team of peacekeepers with the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, arrived in Kajokeji this week to assess humanitarian situation and protect civilians terrorized by recent violence in the area. Another team of human rights experts is in Kajokeji to assess the needs of remaining civilians in the area. Tens of thousands have fled across the border to Uganda because of weeks of deadly fighting. For VOA News, Nabil Biajo reports from Juba.
Daniel Dickinson is the UNMISS spokesperson in Juba. He spoke to VOA today from Juba International Airport just moments before traveling to Bantu. Dickinson says UNMISS peacekeepers are doing their job in Kajokeji, which is to protect civilians.
Peacekeepers from the mission arrived in Kajokeji in the south of the country on Sunday. Civilians have been fleeing the town due to insecurity. Peacekeepers patrolled at the airport and market areas and reported seeing just a handful of civilians, but otherwise they described the situation as relatively calm.
Bishop Emmanuel Murray of the Kajokeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan says only about 200 civilians remain in the area. Bishop Murray says they stayed behind because they did not have the means to flee to Uganda, along the thousands of others who escaped violence in and around Kajokeji in recent weeks.
Because all the people who cannot travel from there to the camps and they don't have money to hire the lorry, so they choose to be behind.
Dickinson says the peacekeepers spent 3 days on the 75-mile-long Juba-Kajokeji road due to the several roadblocks that government forces erected along the way.
The peacekeepers were part of a long-duration patrol, which originated in Juba. Now, the head of UNMISS, David Shearer, said he was pleased the peacekeepers had reached Kajokeji thanks to their persistence.
Aid workers have also been blocked from using the Juba-Kajokeji road, an issue that was raised today in Juba at a meeting held by the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Festus Mogae.
Access by civilian population to humanitarian assistance has been routinely obstructed, with the United Nations reporting in December 2016 that it had recorded 100 incidents against humanitarian workers and aid convoys.
Dickinson says a separate contingent of experts is also in Kajokeji to investigate reports of human rights abuses in the area.
Tuesday morning, an UNMISS civilian team, including human rights, civil affairs, and gender representatives, also arrived in Kajokeji.
The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, released a report this week saying refugees arriving into Uganda from Kajokeji continue to cite violence and indiscriminate killing of civilians, nightly attacks on homes, sexual violence, looting of livestock, and torture as their reasons for leaving South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo in Juba.
The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMAC, says he is concerned about fighting in Kajokeji, Wau, and the Upper Nile State over the past 2 weeks. Festus Mohai says the renewed fighting is a clear violation of the ceasefire signed by all warring parties. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
At the opening of the plenary meeting today in Juba, GEMEC Chairman Festus Mugai said the commission, which is tasked with monitoring the implementation of the 2015 peace agreement, has received numerous reports of violent conflict in the Equatoria's Upper Nile and Unity regions.
Security is the foundation stone upon which every other aspect of South Sudan's future will be built, and it's simply not credible for the parties to preach peace with one hand and simultaneously wage war around the country with the other.
Mugai says GEMEC insists that all parties respect the ceasefire and restore peace. He says ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism officials will investigate violations.
The recent fighting around Malakal and Rank was a blatant violation of the ceasefire. Individually and collectively, JNA condemns the violence. CDSAM has begun their investigations, and I call upon all parties involved to cease all military activity and cooperate fully with these investigations.
Mugai says the continued disrespect for ceasefire by both government and opposition over the past 3 months, along with other armed groups, has worsened the humanitarian situation in South Sudan.
The spread of the conflict in the Equatorias has deepened an already dire humanitarian crisis, as hundreds of thousands have abandoned their livelihoods and crossed borders in search of safety. According to the most recent FAO report, one-third of the national population remains food insecure and aid dependent as the economic crisis worsens.
This week, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, reports that a third of South Sudan's population remains food insecure and dependent on relief aid as the economic crisis worsens. It says more than 52,000 South Sudanese fled to Uganda in January alone. Mugai is urging the government in Juba, the regional bloc IGAD, and the international community to take advantage of a national dialogue President Salva Kiir announced, which will begin next month, but emphasize that the dialogue must be inclusive.
For dialogue to have a real meaning and effect, it must include more than those who already agree with the government and take account of all views and concerns.
Mugai reminds South Sudan's warring parties that they must resolve South Sudan's problems peacefully and politically, not forcefully. Mugai says the peace deal remains the only viable means for delivering sustainable peace and building a good governance in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Officials in northern Cameroon say Boko Haram is hitting back against regional military pressure with suicide attacks. Rarely a week goes by without reports of a bombing. To protect border communities, Cameroon is reinforcing the capabilities of local self-defense groups who help the military. For VOA, Muki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Mora.
Music is played to welcome 200 recruits of the self-defense group in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Among the thousands witnessing the exercise is Far North Region Governor Midjiyawa Bakari.
Sur très haute instruction du chef de l'État, son Excellence Paul Biya.
The governor tells the recruits President Paul Biya has instructed him to visit all border localities to congratulate and encourage self-defense groups and traditional rulers that have been courageously defending people from Boko Haram. Regional troops say they have pushed the terrorists from much of the territory they once occupied. But Boko Haram has resorted to a campaign of suicide attacks, often targeting civilians. The governor gave the vigilantes in Mora motorcycles, bicycles, metal detectors, and cash to help with their efforts. Dele Paul leads the self-defense group in Mora.
Ils sont même presque déjà finis. Ils sont même presque déjà finis et on est prêt à leur finir encore.
He says they are more than ever before determined to eradicate suicide bombings in their locality. There have been concerns about relying on vigilantes, including about the possibility of human rights violations. Last year, some members of self-defense groups were arrested and dismissed on suspicion Boko Haram had infiltrated their ranks. But officials say the self-defense groups are doing much-needed work that saves lives. This is their home. They know their way around, and they share intelligence with the military. VOA joined members of the Mora self-defense group in the field. Strong winds blow over the village late Tuesday. 80 vigilantes armed with machetes, bow and arrows, knives, metal detectors and spears gather to take over from those who worked the afternoon. While the military is tasked with protecting the nation's borders, the self-defense group makes sure no stranger enters their village. Group leader Kadil Usmanu says they have been given cell phones to call the military when they see suspects. He says they are sacrificing for the well-being of their village. VOA could not join them on their patrol near the border. The military said it was not safe. Mora village chief Joseph Manauda says thanks to the vigilantes, the population can sleep at night. He says self-defense groups may not have guns, but they have succeeded in stopping so many attacks. He says when the vigilantes stop suspicious people from crossing into Cameroon, they also inform Nigerian traditional rulers across the border. He says the vigilantes also communicate with Nigerian self-defense groups about suspects crossing the border. Several dozen self-defense group members have been killed in northern Cameroon. Sali Ali Muhammad says he narrowly escaped death. The 44-year-old had been assigned to the island of Lake Chad with his two brothers, who are both men. He says two armed Boko Haram fighters forced them at gunpoint to sail through Lake Chad to a village in Cameroon. He says he knew that they would be killed after rendering the service, so he attacked one of the terrorists and they fell into the lake. He says his two brothers attacked the other terrorists while other boat men called the military, which came to their rescue. He walked away with a bullet in his right hand and was treated at a government hospital for free. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the latest on the tram travel ban? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could travel free in Africa, where would you most like to go?
To me, I think Rwanda. Rwanda, in fact, I just love the name Rwanda, personally. Secondly, I do always hear that in Rwanda, there are very many beautiful ladies there. There are very many beautiful places there.
Kenya, because I think there are nice tourists there. And Obama is from Kenya, so yeah.
I would choose Nigeria for the reasons being that there is oil there.
I think I would prefer to go to West Africa. West Africa, because I really think it's a place which has a lot of opportunities to explore it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The fate of President Donald Trump's controversial order banning entry into the United States of individuals from seven Muslim-majority countries now rests with a federal appeals court. VOA's Richard Green has the full story on the Trump administration efforts to overturn a restraining order that temporarily halts the initiative.
A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco heard oral arguments Tuesday from opposing lawyers during a telephone conference call that was live-streamed over the Internet and broadcast on cable television news. The judges expressed skepticism about the positions taken by Justice Department Attorney August Flinge, who argued on behalf of the Trump administration.
How many federal offenses have we had being committed by people who came in with visas from these countries? And the ultimate was the answer was there haven't been any.
Yes, Your Honor. These proceedings have been moving quite fast, and we're doing the best we can.
You're saying that the proceedings are moving fast, but you appealed to us before you continued in the district court to develop the record. So why should we be hearing this now if it sounds like you're trying to say you're going to present other evidence later?
There have been a number of people from Somalia connected to al-Shabaab who have been convicted in the United States.
Is that in the record? Can you point us to where in the record you're referring?
It is not in the record. There has also been other examples, but again, you're correct. These are not in the record.
The judges also challenged arguments by Noah Purcell, the chief lawyer for the state of Washington, which filed a lawsuit against a travel ban along with Minnesota. Purcell maintained the ban is unconstitutional because it specifically targets Muslims.
But the point is that that was clearly a motivating, what we have alleged, and again, we do have to show a likelihood of success, but at this stage, the case law is clear, our plausible allegations are taken as true for assessing that likelihood of success.
That cannot possibly be true. We are supposed to take your word for it, the fact that you make an allegation of the complaint, and that equals likelihood of success? You don't really mean that, do you?
Rory Fleming, a law professor with the University of California, said he does not think the judges were persuaded by the government's overall argument.
So, I mean, on balance, it doesn't sound like the court is going to grant the motion to vacate the stay. They might try to narrow that, or they might deny the motion and send it back to the trial court to narrow it, which strikes me as probably the more strategic decision.
The three-court panel said it would issue a ruling as soon as possible. Immigrants have been streaming into the U.S. since the lower court suspended the travel ban last Friday. Opponents say if the ban is restored, it may trigger mass confusion and chaos at many of the nation's airports, just as it did when it was first imposed on January 27th. Hundreds of people were detained by customs officers at airports, and some of them were deported. That action sparked nationwide protests and prompted legal action on many fronts. Professor Fleming said no matter what happens at the federal appeals court, the case is likely to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court has been evenly divided between four liberal-leaning justices and four conservative-leaning ones since the death last year of Justice Antonin Scalia. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
Some American psychologists taking issue with the common belief that children around the world are watching far too many video games and television and that it is affecting their well-being. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
Until last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that children and teenagers engage in no more than 2 hours of screen time per day. But psychologist Christopher Ferguson of Stetson University in Florida points to a lack of data backing up the notion that too many hours spent playing video games or watching TV is truly harmful. Still, Ferguson says that's a common public perception.
So
So there's always this kind of sense of there being a zero-sum game, that the more time our kids are spending with screens, the less time they're spending with academics, the more they're getting exposed to all kinds of, you know, antisocial messages or objectionable messages that we would not like our kids to be exposed to. And
a British study, according to Ferguson, found there was a very small negative effect, about a 1% increase, in aggression and depression among kids who engage in 6 or more hours of screen time per day. Ferguson wanted to see if there was a similar effect among American adolescents. So he and a team of investigators analyzed responses from a survey on risky behaviors given to about 6,000 kids in Florida. Their average age was 16. The questionnaire was developed by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Data from the 2013 survey found that American children are also fairly resistant to the negative effects of screen consumption. Among those who played video games, watched TV, or worked on the computer up to 6 hours per day, there was a small increase in delinquency of 0.5%, a 1.7% increase in depressive symptoms, and a 1.2% negative impact on school grades. The researchers saw no increase in risky sex or driving behaviors, the use of illegal substances, or eating disorders.
Kids actually can consume, you know, a larger amount of media than we kind of thought in the past, you know, really kind of up to 6 hours per day without there being any kind of noticeable correlation with, you know, problematic behaviors.
The findings were published in the journal Psychiatric Quarterly. The Pediatric Association no longer recommends a limit on screen time, instead suggesting that parents try to strike a balance with beneficial activities such as getting enough sleep, exercising, and doing homework. Ferguson agrees that those things are important, but goes a step further, saying youngsters should become intimately familiar with screen technology since it's become an essential part of our everyday lives, from academics to work. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Baseball may be known as the American pastime, but it has gained considerable popularity in parts of Latin America, Asia, and now on another continent, Africa. Lenin Rovaga reports for VOA from Kikuyu, outside Kenya's capital, Nairobi, on the country's largest little league.
The Kilimanjaro All-Stars run drills before a much-anticipated game.
Balance! 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 Jump! Go on jumping! While your legs are on toes! On toes and go on jumping!
Team captain Kelly Lemayen is one of the shortest members on the team and one of the youngest at just 12 years old. But he commands respect on the baseball diamond. He plays shortstop.
I like it because it is a very wonderful game and I like it. It gives me discipline. Discipline just can help me. It helps me because if I have discipline at school, even in the baseball, I have discipline.
This is Kenya's Little League Baseball. There are 4 organizations around Kenya running baseball programs, but this is the largest. The league started 3 years ago and draws players from 50 local schools. Equipment is donated by 2 US-based nonprofits, Angels at Bat and American Friends of Kenya. Chapman Owino coaches the Kilimanjaro All-Stars.
Loud and proud.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
The team draws teens from impoverished backgrounds.
Somewhere over the weekends, they were selling scraps, moving around the town. But baseball, made them busy. They are now more responsible even at home. That's why you see even the parents are supporting my program. The parents are supporting me. Yeah, asking so-and-so in the field. You see, that means something has changed. Even their brain capacity, you see, even their performance in school now is very fantastic.
Today, the Kilimanjaro All-Stars are pitted against the Alliance High School Batmen. Batmen team manager Patrick Ascendi says baseball is catching on in Kenya. Finding qualified coaches is the biggest challenge.
Some of us have to go to YouTube and learn the game. We have to wait for visitors to come, especially from the Baseball Federation, when they're coming and bringing in coaches, so they're able to help us.
But in Kenya, can baseball really give football and athletics a run for their money? The president of the Little League, George Mahinda, certainly thinks so.
We need to diversify beyond athletics. Kenya, we are known for athletics, which means when you go to baseball, we are going to beat the rest of the world because we are already good in running around the field.
The Kilimanjaro All-Stars win the game, beating the Batmen 10-7. But the team is eyeing bigger titles. No Kenyan team has ever played in the Little League World Series held every year in the United States. The Kilimanjaro All-Stars aim to be the first. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Kikuyu.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Unmissed peacekeepers are in Kejukeji area of Yei River State. They arrived 2 days ago to assess humanitarian conditions and to protect civilians traumatized by recent fighting. Another team of human rights experts is there to assess the needs of the 200 or so civilians that are left in the area. Tens of thousands have already fled across the border to Uganda in recent weeks because of the deadly fighting. Daniel Dickinson, the UN mission in South Sudan spokesman in Juba, confirms that unmissed peacekeepers are in Kejukeji to protect civilians. Bishop Emmanuel Murr of the Kejukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan in South Sudan says those that stayed behind did so because they have no means of escaping to Uganda. The head of JMIC says he's concerned about fighting in Kejukeji, Wau, and Upper Nile over the past 2 weeks. Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission Chairman Festus Mahai says the renewed fighting is a clear violation of the ceasefire signed by all warring parties. At the opening of a JMIC meeting today, Mahai said the commission has received numerous reports of violent conflict in the Equatorias and other regions. He said it's not credible for the leaders of the warring parties to preach peace while simultaneously waging war around the country on each other. And finally, the fate of U.S. President Donald Trump's order banning entry into the U.S. of individuals from 7 Muslim-majority countries now rests with a federal appeals court in California. The Trump administration is trying to overturn a restraining order that temporarily halts the initiative. A 3-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco heard oral arguments Tuesday from opposing lawyers during a telephone conference call that was live-streamed over the Internet and broadcast on cable TV news. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Agam Long Agar by Abie Jasban. We have been listening to Abie Jazz Band with the song Jam Agam Long Agar. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.